Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Adventures in Angular. This week on our panel, we have Richard Sitorle.
Hey, hey, what's up?
Subrat Mishra.
Hello.
We have a new panelist that is Sani Yusuf.
Hola, hola, hola. Hello, everybody.
I'm Charles Max Wood from devchat.tv, and this week we have a special guest, and he's got like four names. Lars. I'm just going to say Lars Nielsen. Everybody knows who you are, right, Lars?
Yeah, please call me Lars Brink. Lars Nielsen is like the John Smith of Denmark.
That's right.
50,000 of us out there. So Lars Brink is fine. Just ignore the rest.
Good deal. I remember working my tail off to become a senior developer. I read every book I could get my hands on. I went to any conference I could and watched the videos about the things that I thought I needed to learn. And eventually, I got that senior developer job. And then I realized that the rest of my career looked just like where I was now. I mean, where was the rush I got from learning? What was I supposed to do to keep growing? And then I found it. I got the chance to mentor some developers. I started a podcast and helped many more developers. I did screencasts and helped even more developers. I kind of became a dev hero. And now I want to help you become one too. And if you're looking forward to something more than doing the same thing at a different job 3 years from now, then join the Dev Heroes Accelerator. I'll walk you through the process of building and growing a following and finding people that you can uniquely help as you build the next stage of your career. You can learn more at devheroesaccelerator.com. Now, we haven't had you on the show for a little while. Do you want to just remind people who you are and why you're famous in the Angular community?
Yeah, I was actually on my Angular story a couple of years ago in 2019. And since then, I have been doing a lot of public tech contributions of many different types. Became a Microsoft MVP in developer technologies a year ago and this year as well. I've been writing a lot. I believe we talked about that on the previous episode where I joined, that I was just about to publish my first articles on Angular in depth, as is what it was called back then. Since then, I think I've written like 30 articles on mostly Angular. And I started speaking as well. So I've been at different conferences, many this past year even. Because of the COVID circumstances, there's been a lot of opportunities for speaking globally, but virtually, right? Mm-hmm. That's been great. Currently writing a book about Angular IV. So also excited about that. It's coming close to an end. And I have started some open source software teams called NG Workers with a few people from around the world. And we have published 2 Angular libraries this year. And I also founded a new community called This Is Learning, which is for public tech contributors of all kinds.
Nice. And you don't sleep, apparently.
Exactly. That's my secret. Now it's out there.
Yeah, I'm listening to this and I'm feeling more and more inadequate. So yeah, I mean, it's amazing all the community contributions. And maybe we should have you back on and just talk about how to kind of sit down and figure out where you want to contribute, what niche you want to hit within the communities, because I think it's important for people to recognize, you know, where they can stand and where they can lift. But yeah, that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about the routing testing module that you pulled together here and wrote 3 articles about. Do you want to just explain really quickly what the kind of inspiration and idea is behind this? And then we can dive in and start talking about the pros and cons of your approach here.
Yeah, we're talking about the router testing module from Angular itself, but yeah, the thing about that is it's barely documented and there wasn't a lot of content out there covering it at all. So I worked for a software company in Denmark called System8, and we do a little internal development product, but also mostly like for hire, for contracts and stuff. So I joined as a contractor for some projects on critical national infrastructure in Denmark for electricity grid. So I was doing operational and planning systems in an Angular app. And yeah, the quality bar is pretty high there because make a mistake and there's a blackout in Denmark, right? So we were trying different things out on how to make good tests and get test coverage and which types of tests. And the one thing I couldn't get right was like how to test a whole, as you could call it, like a whole Angular feature, or maybe a routed Angular feature module or something like that. So I was doing unit tests, isolated unit tests. I was doing some integrated test with several classes, and we were doing a BDD using an end-to-end testing framework. So we had that covered as well. But I was missing something in between, something that was a little more lightweight than an end-to-end testing framework, so that I could test these, like a whole area of the application, right? A whole scope or subdomain or bounded context, whatever you want to call it. It has many names. But it was a modular code base, right? It was a monorepo using the NX toolchain. So we had a nice architecture, but I couldn't quite figure out how to test like a whole part of that application without spinning up an end-to-end testing framework and the BDD framework we had on top of that, Cucumber. So what did I do? I found a router testing module, but it wasn't documented. So I went to the source code and all the tests, and that led me to learn about the router and all of its dependencies in Angular. And there's a lot of those. So it was a bit of a mess to try to figure out. It was pretty complex, like how do all these classes fit together? What do they do? What's their purpose? And how are they replaced with all these different testing modules, including the router testing module? So yeah, I dug deep into all of that source code and the test and made a lot of experiments. And yeah, we can dive deeper into those topics and what the end result was of that.
Yeah, you mentioned that it wasn't documented. And I was like, I mean, I thought you had invented it.
Okay, so do you remember when Victor Safkin was on the Angular team years ago?
Yeah.
So he created an issue on the Angular GitHub repo about something to do with the router testing module. Or maybe he didn't create it, but he commented a lot on it with different ideas because someone was asking, and I don't remember, maybe it was another person from the Angular team or something like that. But they were asking, how can we replace all these various objects and data structures that are used for the activated route service? It has many different data structures. They are nested. So they're really difficult to create in an isolated unit test. And that was kind of the question. So Victor had a lot of different ideas. But then, as we probably know, most of us, he left Google and created the Narwhal company. But the issue is still out there. And years later, right? It's probably 4 years ago. And yeah, of course, I went into that issue as well and got some inspiration. He had some good ideas. So yeah, now there's an issue to document the router testing module, but it hasn't been done yet. So the most extensive content covering it would probably be my three articles on Dev Community, the This is Angular publication on Dev Community.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, yeah, hopefully we can get somebody to do that. You want to be our hero, folks? So let's just dive right in. I mean, how do we get started then with the router testing module? Like, how do we pull this in and start testing this without, getting that end-to-end stuff going, either with Cucumber or Cypress or whatever?
So there's many things that the router testing can help test. I created an article for three of the different concepts. One is a routing component, one is a routed component, and one is a route guard. So who's familiar with those concepts?
Yeah. The concepts.
They all said yeah, and I made a face like,
Sorry, you said routing component, route guard, and what, which one?
There's a routing component and a routed component. So there's a slight difference between those two. And as you said, the route guards as well. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if you're going to touch on the difference between a routing component. I don't know if you're coming from just a expressional point of view or more, actually, this is something that you coined. So I'm willing to hear about those two.
So you'll find those concepts mentioned in the Angular documentation. If you look into the testing guides, there will be a few examples of this. And you can choose to test it as kind of a unit test, an isolated unit test, if you have one of these. Or you can do more of an integrated test. And I do both in my articles. And then I compare the techniques. And then you can decide for yourself which one you prefer, or maybe both, right? But the difference between them, the Angular routing component, that is a component that routes to another component or another route when something happens, like you click a button or link or maybe every 5 seconds it will navigate to another page just to mess with you or something like that. That's a routing component. So it will either have the router service and call navigate by URL and navigate, or it will have a router link directive with the route in its template.
Okay.
So both of those will result in a routing component.
Okay. And I'm guessing the routed component is the one that is the destination. So that's where the forechild or foreroute or whatever, where you eventually will lead you to, the where you can get the activated route service to get those details.
Exactly. A routed component is the target of a route. So it's mentioned in the route configuration.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to be sure because that's kind of what I had in my head. But so thank you very much for that.
And then finally, the route guards. We don't use them as much, but they're very powerful when we need them. Usually they're used for like security, like authorization and authentication. Mm. But you can do some other interesting things with them.
So, can you please give an example, like other thing than authorization or something?
Yeah, okay. So the canonical example is like protecting routes, that you have to be authorized, like you have to have logged into the system, and you need to be authorized. You need to have access to that part of the system, right, through your JSON web token or whatever, something like that, an access code. Those are the canonical examples of route guards, but you can also do route guards that prevent a user from leaving a route. Maybe they have some unsafe changes, right? That pattern where, oh, are you sure you want to navigate away because you didn't persist this your changes yet? You can use a route guard for that. And I'm currently working on kind of a prototype for a product at my company. And we're using route guards for onboarding people so that when they enter the app, they're redirected over to a place where they can create their profile. And it also manages all the state of, okay, so they have a profile. Do they have all the, like they have to authorize with the government to use this application? So there's a whole flow there of going between our application and a government solution and back again. And then the authorization can also expire. So there's also a check for that. So there's a few things you can do with route guards.
Yeah. Would a following use case be suitable for that? I recently did so a purchase online, and part of that process was basically I clicked the button and I was routed to my banking application, but like a subset of the application, just the login page where I had to enter my details. And then after I authorized on my handset, then they were able to process whatever information that they needed. And then I was logged out and I continued with the process. Would that scenario fit into the use of route guard as you've described it?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you would most likely you would integrate with their system, similar to what I described, that you leave the app to go to another system, or maybe you have an embedded, I don't know, an iframe or web component or something like that. But then you enter back into your app, and now there's another route guard to check that everything is in order now. And if not, you'll be sent there again to authorize on your phone or whatever, two-factor authorization or whatever you're using. So yeah, you could use a route guard for that, the front-end side.
Right. So you wrote about how to test that. Like, I can't imagine how you would even begin thinking about testing something like that. It sounds like there's a lot of moving parts there. So can you just break it down in simple terms?
Sure. So, okay, let's do a routing component. That's the first article I wrote about. Mm-hmm. And this is where we need to, well, as soon as we start using the router testing module, we have to realize what it's doing for us. But if we're doing an isolated unit test, we're not using the router testing module. We're testing the route guards more as classes, right? So how they interact with other services, or like the router for navigating away or something like that. So that's one way to test it. But my question is then, how much confidence does that give you that it works with the full, like in a full application? If you have a lot of experience in this area of routing and the router services and so on, that you might have a good confidence after writing the isolated unit test for your routing component. But yeah, I've been moving more towards integrating more in the framework, like involving more parts of the framework to get more of a testing environment that's more similar to a real app rather than looking at just one component and no route configurations. Because the tricky part is, so this is a routing component. I'm trying to think like what do we need here? Yeah, the routing component, it will either use the router link directive to navigate on a click, for example, or it will use the router service, the navigate methods on there. So you would have to replace that router service with a class with some spies so that you can verify that after clicking the button, it requests the router to navigate away, or it requests the router link directive, but which one, right? So now we're starting to getting into you know about the implementation details now. And that's pretty common for more isolated unit tests, but it's also pretty fragile. I mean, it shouldn't make a difference to the user if you're using the router service or you're using a router link directive in the template. So it's not as good and resilient to changes of the implementation. I mean, these are implementation details if you're using the router link directive or the router service. And even the router service has two different methods. I know you had, what's his name? He's from Eastern Europe. He was talking about the router on a previous episode. And I remember you were discussing these two APIs, different methods, navigate and navigate by URL. But yeah, the main thing to know is there are two of them. And which one should we spy on? And which one should we make assertions on? For the user, it doesn't matter. If you're testing this class, it does matter because it will only be calling one of them, or even it will be calling the router link directive. And how are you going to assert in your tests that it has been triggered? That is a little difficult to do. So it is possible to do an isolated unit test or at least a component test so that you're just rendering this one component in your test here, but not other components and not other routes. So you are kind of isolating the test around this one component and its route, but you're not actually, like, you're not taking the full flow of navigating away to another component. You're kind of stopping up here and saying, oh, so it called the router service or it triggered this router link directive, and that means it's going to a different route. And now I can inspect which route, depending on which of the three options was used. Even the router link directive, there are two variants of it. There's one used for buttons and there's one used for anchor elements, the links. So there's actually four different APIs you have to be aware of to do it this way. So this leads me to think like there must be an easier way and one that gives me more confidence and I don't have to, it's not as fragile if I want to refactor. And this is where the router testing module can help us. So I think I'll move on to explaining about how that makes a difference in this case for the routing component. The router testing module, it stops, as it's called, it replaces some of the dependencies of the router because the router has a lot of different dependencies also coming from different Angular services. If you open the first of my articles, you'll see a whole hierarchy of dependencies. There's the router at the top. It depends on the location service from Angular, which depends on the location strategy, which is an abstract class that it can have several implementations depending on your app. And that depends on the platform location, which can also have several implementation. And that one then depends on the DOM adapter, which also has a few implementations. And that one, the real browser DOM adapter, will depend on the window object for events, global events in the DOM. It will depend on the history API, and it will depend on the location API of the browser. So there's both the location service from Angular Common and the location global API from the browser. So all of those are intertangled together. But when we import the router testing module, we replace some of these. I'm trying to remember which ones are replaced. Yeah, I think actually, yeah, the router testing module will replace the location service with a spy location. So it kind of cuts off all the other dependencies, so you don't have to be aware of those or inspect them. So that's pretty nice. However, there's kind of a weird hierarchy between some of these router related classes in Angular. because the router link directive has a dependency on the router, but also directly on the location strategy. So that's another service. And I think this is leftovers from early versions of Angular. This is really like, it shouldn't depend on that. It should only depend on the router, but it does. So the router testing module also replaces the location strategy with a service called the mock location strategy. So yeah, there's a lot of things going on. it took a while to figure all of that out. I was just taking notes for a while before I even started writing. And then I tried to visualize this in that article so you can get a feel, like visual learning is pretty good for most people. So you can get a feel for that hierarchy of dependencies and how the router testing module comes in and cuts off the dependencies and says, here's a fake dependency. We don't have to care about all of that, because what all of that does is interacting with the browser to actually change the URL and change the history and the push state, all of those navigation and routing related APIs in the browser. So as soon as we cut them off in the test, the browser, let's say we're using Karma, right? The default test runner with Angular. That's actually running in a browser. So if you change the URL, you move away from the test suite. So that will be a problem. So we definitely have to use it with Karma. But even with Jest, there could also be an issue if you're not importing this router testing module, because Jest is running in Node.js, and Node.js doesn't have all of these browser-specific APIs, the location and history. They are for the browser only, so they're not in a Node.js context.
Okay, it's a lot of things.
Yeah, I think I'll be honest with you. This is the first time I'm hearing about like testing the router or the routing system. I'll be honest, and I'm probably honest that I'm speaking for probably 4 out of the 5 people in this room, that there's only one person that can test. But if we're going to be very honest, and it's because it's always like, you know, you kind of test what's happening on this page, and you just kind of fix that. You know, the router is just going to work, but there are cases where you need that integration. When Lars was speaking about onboarding, you were speaking to the choir. I've done that before, right? I work in healthcare, so I've got to, we got to have users where we're creating users, but without an email address, all right? So that means you got to like have these usernames you're going to pass around, and you need to know who's who. So the first time they log in, you need to give them they have to change their password to a more secure password. So you got to catch that in a guard and onboard them differently. So when you were speaking that, you were poking at my whole my nest, and I was just like, oh Lord, that should totally be tested. And I like to think I'm the guy in the office that goes, things need to be tested, right? I'm that extremist. And then here I am, and I'm meeting you, and I'm like, oh, well, damn. You know? So it's really, really good to hear these use cases and see, like, you know, sometimes you think you got it all covered, but you've just blown my head off saying, holy smokes, we should definitely be testing these intricacies. And now, like, yeah, so I'm taking away a lot from this conversation. Yes.
Yeah. So I just want to ask a simple question. It may be pretty simple for you. So like for a normal developer point of view, how to decide, like, should I test, go for a unit test, or should I go for an integration test? Like what's the parameter?
Well, of course, that onboarding flow that Sani was talking about, you can cover that with tests using an end-to-end testing framework. And that would be like as close to the real app as possible, right? So that would be good. If you're comfortable with that, just use that. This method of testing won't give you any advantages except for the speed. It'll be a lot faster, like maybe 5-10 times faster than the end-to-end testing framework. So that could also be valuable, right? So considering whether you should do an isolated unit test or more of an integrated unit test by using the router testing module, my recommendation would be to always use the router testing module between those two options, because the isolated unit tests, they're really, really brittle, and it's very difficult to replace all these structures, the internal data structures for the activated route service that will become relevant for the routed components, and especially also for the route guard. You really don't want to be creating fake versions of them because they are there's internal hierarchies in those structures, so they're pretty difficult to get right. And even especially if we go further than that and go like a whole user flow from I'm entering this thing, then I'm entering this form control, I'm filling that out, then I'm clicking a button, then I'm ending up on a second step of a wizard, for example, and I'm filling all of that out, and finally I end up in the, like, your user has been created or whatever we're doing here, or your order has been placed. You can test a whole flow like that. Of course, that's easy, pretty easy to do if you're familiar with end-to-end tests, but the breakthrough here for me is you can do that with the test bed and the router testing module, but at a faster speed. And you also get like the flexibility of the test bed that you can go and replace small parts of your app or on Angular, or maybe mug out some native APIs, where that could be difficult in some end-to-end testing frameworks because you can't really replace individual parts of your app. You're booting up the entire application and you can only replace some of the native APIs, and sometimes some native APIs are not really supported by the end-to-end testing framework, which makes it hard. So in this case, using the testbed could be a better option. So yeah, there's like trade-offs, right?
Mm. Yeah, there's always trade-offs, I suppose. There was one thing that actually really jumped out for me when I was going through your article last night, and it's something that you mentioned. The router link, I remember, I think it was the part where you were doing the integration testing, the second part of the article. And the thing that jumped out to me was that because we're using these magic strings where you have to declaratively define the URL, and you basically have to repeat or do the same within your test, right? So that got me thinking, like, what is then the alternative? Like, what would you recommend instead of using those magic strings?
Yeah, so it's an issue that most of us are not even aware of. But when you point it out, it becomes pretty clear and you can't unsee it again. And mm-hmm. This is the issue, as you mentioned, that in our component templates, we have URLs for routes that are unrelated to this component. So the route itself is controlled outside of this component, maybe in a different module. But we have the magic strings smeared all over our templates often for using it with the router link directive or calling the router service. So what's an alternative to having the magic strings there? Well, you could create kind of an object or a data structure, a tree of routes yourself. That's the low fidelity solution, low tech solution. Mm-hmm. But there's even a library out there called Routes Hub or Route Hub or something like that. I probably mentioned that in the article. Yeah, it's called Routes Hub by Max Tarsis from Ukraine. So that's an interesting one to check out if you're interested in this problem.
Right. Yeah, because that's pretty interesting. I mean, if you look at, for example, the Tour of Heroes example on Angular.io, that's exactly what they're using there as well. So that, yeah, pointed me to wonder what alternatives are there. But yeah, that looks like what sounds like a workable solution to easily get around that.
Yeah, can you see why that it might be an issue to have the routes as magic strings in the templates?
Typos.
Yeah, for one, and also if we're changing the route, but that route is mentioned in 20 different components scattered throughout the app, right?
Right.
So we don't have a single source of truth anymore. The yeah. route configuration should be the single source of truth, but it's not. So this is similar to like state management, but for the routes, right? And this is where Routes Hub take it a step further and creates all the structures you need for having your route paths in an object that's accessible both from the template or from a service. So it'll be as easy to use as writing the URL in the template for a router directive. But it will be strongly typed, and it will allow refactoring or changing routes without breaking links in 20 different components. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the idea of enum, TypeScript enums, also comes to mind. It's very useful, especially when it comes to maintenance and refactoring your code. You don't have to do a full search of the entire code base and manually changing that and having a single point of failure or refactor.
Yeah, that's definitely one solution. the problem then becomes composability. Because would you then have one enum for a whole app, or how would you distribute that across your app? Because one part of it needs to refer to the other part and its routes.
Right.
Okay, so just to try to wrap up the part about routing components, what we're looking for here is we're interacting with our component, and then the result is, or the outcome is, among other things, that you end up at a different route. So you would inspect that by with a spy on the router service or a router link directive. And that's for the isolated unit test. For the integrated test, where you're using the router testing module, you can actually inject these two services from Angular, the router service and the location service. And what we're interested in here is the location service. It has a path method, and that path will tell us what's the current URL. So that's the easiest way to check like which route did you end up on. You could also like go through, the router has this hierarchy of the active components and routes. So you could go and inspect like which instance is the active component right now, but that's pretty difficult to navigate that tree of active routes. There should really be some helpers for that. So there I would recommend using the path method of the location service.
Yeah, that's cool. So I can see here like you have a different library called Spectacular.
That's right.
Can you just little tell about us that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah, you'll have to stop me, right? This is my baby.
Yeah.
So if we want to cover other topics, you have to stop me. So this is the result of all of this research. This is what I needed back when I joined that company, and we wanted to have like a very broad and very extensive test coverage, and even testing the same things but at different levels of granularity, which is good. Like you're not picking just either unit test or P test. Like, no, you're covering it on different levels. So Spectacular is the framework, the testing library I needed, but it wasn't out there, right? There's a lot of Angular testing libraries out there. I guess what they have in common, most of them, is they all try to reduce the boilerplate code of setting up the Angular testing module with the testbed, because that's a piece of work to get that right. This was also the key for me here, was figuring out how to configure the router testing module. Because the router testing module, if you import it just the module, it will replace these dependencies. But it has a static method as well called with routes. And here you can pass it an array of routes, similar to what you would do for router module for root or router module for child. But here it is for root, actually. So, but again, this was something that wasn't documented anywhere. And it was, I'm not sure it was even covered in the tests. At least not maybe in a very broad integration test for routing in Angular. And these were like 4 years old. So it was interesting to see that not much has changed there, right? But yeah, basically Spectacular is the testing library that helps you configure the test bed. Other Angular testing libraries do that, but Spectacular has some specialized, what we call here, test harnesses. Basically, there's a function you call. There's one called create feature harness that will create a feature testing harness for a router, a routed feature module. So you get back an object that has some helpful properties like the location service, the router service, the inject function to resolve dependencies. It has a root component fixture and a root component if you need that. It also has two other APIs, a pipe testing API for integration testing Angular pipes, and one called the application harness for testing Bootstrap listeners and application initializers and configuration modules for kind of containing those. So those are kind of three APIs in Spectacular. And the most interesting one, and the one that's related to what we're talking about now, is the feature testing API, so the feature harness. So that will set up the router testing module and Angular testbed, and it will run some initialization. So what you do here when using that is you pass it a routed feature module, say a dashboard module, and the path for that module. So that will be a string of dashboard. It has to be the same as in the application. And this is another reason for storing those route paths in a variable that you can access in parts of your code, because tests also need, when you start to test this, you're also going to need the different route URL segments or the route paths. So you're telling Spectacular here that I want to test this routed feature module. Here's the module, here's the path for that as it's used in the app. And by doing that, you now have access to all the routes defined by that feature module, all the components inside of it, all the services, although you're not mentioning any of these things. So you're importing it or passing it to Spectacular, kind of like what you would do in the for root, router module for root, right? You would say load children and the path that resolves the module, the import path, right? And then the route path, say dashboard. So you're kind of giving it the same details as you would in a route configuration, but it then goes and sets up the test bed and the router testing module so that in the test, you now have access to all these routes and all these components, all these services that are defined inside of your feature. So that was my goal here, like saying, I want to test this whole feature, the heroes feature or the dashboard feature or the user feature, or what do you know, right? So now with that setup, you can go beyond just testing one component and one route. So now you can actually enter the dashboard component route in your test. You can click on a tile in a dashboard and you can verify that you end up in like a detail page for that tile. Maybe it's a chart, right? Maybe it's a drill down chart. So you can say, you can verify in your test that you're ending up in the right place. You can even continue from them and say, okay, so I'm drilling down this chart and now I'm on the next component. Now I'm clicking the next level and drilling down another level down this hierarchy of drill downs. And now I end up in the right place again. So you can create these longer lived tests similar to what you might want to do with an end-to-end testing framework. But you can also stop there and say, like, I click this tile on the dashboard and I end up on the details page. That's one test. And then I have another test that starts at that point and goes beyond.
Mm.
Because usually you want your test to assert one thing or a few things, usually as rule of thumb, just one thing per test. But you have the option here to like make a whole user flow in one test case. And that's quite unique. It's basically the only way to do this without introducing an end-to-end testing framework.
Hey folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
That is amazing. I actually, as I was going through the article, I didn't get the full sense of how powerful it is, but the way that you're explaining it now, I can see clearly how very useful that could be in those scenarios. Wow.
So the spectacular is spectacular.
Yeah. The tagline is spectacular angular integration testing.
Yeah, that's a hell of a... We should have named this episode that. Spectacular. Yeah. It's a good one, man.
There is another testing library out there. It's called Spectator. It's also a very good one. So yeah. Careful with the names. Don't get them confused. Because they do different things. They're both very good, but they do specific things. Spectator is older and has many more APIs, whereas Spectacular is new. It's from this year, and it only has 3 APIs right now, but one of them is really powerful, this feature testing API. There is a missing piece here, also about the name. It was just, I really liked that name so much that even though it was similar to an existing one, I had to keep it.
I actually had that question in mind. Like, how did Spectacular library come about, and what is your short and long term vision for it?
I was trying to get at something and now I forgot. Maybe we'll get back to it. Right? But yeah, short and long term vision. Okay, so right now it's version 0.2.0, so it's kind of a pre release. but it is very stable. I've been working on this for a year. I'm using it at work in production. The only reason right now it's not in version one is I want to be able to tell you, give you a guarantee that it works with many different versions of Angular without having many different versions of the library. Because that's something we managed to do with also the ngworkers library called Lumberjack. That's a logging library for Angular. We have one version of the library, 2x, that supports Angular 9.0, 9.1, and so on, all the way up to 12.0 with one version of the library. We have a very elaborate CI workflow using GitHub Actions so that we're actually verifying every single aspect, like using the library in an app, running all the tests without having a duplicate set of example apps and test suites. We're running the same example apps and the same tests, but with 12 or so, or maybe it's 14 versions of Angular at this point. So that's a good topic on its own, right? But I want the same thing for Spectacular before I call it version 1.0, because I want to be able to tell you, you can use it for every version of Angular from 9.0 and forwards, probably. And right now, I can only tell you that it works with 11 and 12, as far as I know, but I can give you no guarantees. So that's why it's still in version 0.2.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm working on documentation because you need good documentation and you need a logo. I have a nice logo as well, created by Felipe Zambrano. So those are the three pieces, right? You need the library that does something useful. You need a good logo and a nice name as well. And you need documentation so that people can figure out how to use it. Because as you might testify now, this is the library you didn't know that you need. So I'll have to do a good job at explaining what it does and how you use it, right? So right now, the next thing that you will see is a documentation website for Spectacular using Docusaurus. So it's just being worked on right now. I have it deployed to GitHub Pages, and I'm trying to cover the three different APIs and the library as a whole. Other than that...
Oh man, this just... Yeah. Sorry, I was going to say, there's just a wealth of information and topics to discuss. Chuck, I think we're going to need to get Lars back.
He knows how to get on our schedule. Lars, you are welcome. Just hit that link and schedule another one. I'm not sure that we finished our discussion on router testing either.
Right.
No.
So actually, Spectacular is one piece of the puzzle to do these like integrated feature tests for routed feature modules. What Spectacular doesn't do is it does not give you a way to interact with the DOM in a nice way. So you would still have to use testbed for that. That's pretty cumbersome if you've tried that before, like the debug element, the query for a directive, a query for a CSS selector and so on, and inspecting that and triggering events in the Angular testbed way is also difficult. But a nice way to go around this is testing as a user using that approach. Like, what does the user see when they open this part of the application? Well, they see a text element that displays some information. You can inspect that. Or they see a button. You can click that. So when taking this approach, and this is the same as end-to-end test, right? We're not talking about in our tests components and services and all of that. We're testing like the whole app, or this, it's just this one part of the app, this feature, but we're testing the whole package as the user would use it. So we can interact with the DOM, we can see what's presented in the DOM. And of course we want some side effects like storing something in local storage or opening up a WebSocket or sending an HTTP request or maybe some IO if it's in more of a hybrid app or something like that. But yeah, so what we're missing here is a nice way to interact with the DOM without having to know about components, and that can be difficult to do with the testbed. So I would recommend combining Spectacular's feature testing API with the library called Angular Testing Library. Maybe you've heard about some of the testing library family of libraries. It's by Kent C. Dodds. He created the DOM testing library and the React testing library. And there's one for Angular called the Angular Testing Library. So it has similar concepts and it's adjusted for Angular. And Tim DeSchreiber from the NGRX team is maintaining the Angular testing library. So those two, they actually fit very nicely together because the Angular testing library is focusing on one component. It also has a concept of navigating, but it's still, you can only have one route active at a time, almost. If you wanted to include a whole feature, you would have to know how to configure something like the router testing module. So this is what Spectacular can give you. And then the Angular testing library can give you ways of interacting with the DOM and seeing what's rendered by your application and considering things like accessibility, semantic HTML, and area roles and all of that. So it's a really nice approach. Test as a user and having access to a whole part of the application. It's a really nice combination.
So by listening, this one question just came to my mind. Like, so if we are doing a lazy loading a module and then you are testing, then how to do that? Our integration testing if our browser is not loading. And as you also point out, the problem in Karma and Node.
Yeah, so lazy loading a module, you actually don't need to do that in your test, at least not the routed feature module. I mean, it's lazy loaded in the app, but load children also supports just passing a callback that leads to the module. So that would be eager loading or static, mm-hmm. transparent loading. You don't have to lazy load it in the test, and it's a bit difficult to do it. I tested that it works exactly the same way. So Spectacular doesn't lazy load the module as part of your test, but it'll work exactly as in the app. But mm-hmm. it can have lazy loaded routes itself inside of its nested routes, and that should work out of the box. So you don't have to worry about this. You can pass the class directly, and it will set up this router testing module in the way Angular expects.
Yeah, that's cool.
He's gotten us speechless.
Yeah.
See? This is what he does. This is what he does. He's got you speechless. Now you want to go and refactor that app that took you 3 years to write. And you want to start testing every route and everything. Everybody in your office is going to think you're crazy, but you're not, because Lars has told you to test that stuff.
That's right. Do what Lars says.
Yeah. So I'm trying to give you a way where that makes it easy. Right.
Yes.
And that's what we need. We need something that makes it easy and convenient, because then we will write those tests.
Yes.
That's what every Angular testing library out there does. It hides away some of the framework and testbed boilerplate and encapsulates it in a nice API. And that's what I've tried to do here as well. I wrote all the code myself, but I had feedback from my open source group, NG Workers. They helped me shape and design the API so that it's the most convenient and easy to use.
Right. Yeah. Listening of NG Worker. Sorry for deviating from the topic. So I think maybe our listener who is a developer want to know how they can join, and myself, this is my question. So how I can join and start contributing on NG Worker. So is that any particular process or just...
So I mentioned this community for public tech contributors called This Is Learning that I'm organizing. And everyone is welcome to join there. You just have to have the interest of learning and sharing in public. That's the only demand. And then we can help you. Like you can have existing experience with contributing to open source or writing or speaking, or maybe you want to learn how to do it and what's the good way to approach these different topics. So you can come in and get feedback from your peers here. We have these publications on dev community. We have some public knowledge projects in the works, a course for RxJS and some programming guides for Angular and other technologies. So what you would do then is you contact me, because right now we don't have a website, but that's coming as well. And then you'll get an invite to we have a private Discord server. It's mm-hmm. it's private because it's the community of the writers and the contributors, but it's open to everyone who wants to join. So you just have to ask and tell me, I want to start contributing to open source, or I want to start writing. Okay, come on in and we'll help you. So that will be one way, specifically for NG Workers. You can also raise an issue or find us on Twitter. So maybe I should mention the names. It's me, Lars Brink, and there's Santosh Yadav of India. And there's Nacho Vasquez of Uruguay, originally from Cuba. And then we have Serkan Sipahi. He's from Hamburg, Germany, has his origins in Turkey. So we're kind of a distributed worldwide team. That's really nice in itself.
Yeah. I was just making a joke. I said diversity is a great thing, but y'all took it to the extreme. I got some from all four corners of there. What are you trying to do? Like four horsemen of the apocalypse? Like, you know, take it. You know, don't pay attention to me.
We're in a nuclear safe distance from each other, right? So you cannot wipe out energy workers without wiping out.
The project will continue.
Yes,
I think three of you are based in Europe, so.
Yeah, smart.
Yeah. Well, I think we're kind of getting toward the end of our time. Is there anything that we ought to have covered that we didn't get to related to testing, routing, and things like that?
Yeah, okay. So let me try to give like a brief overview of the other topics that we actually didn't cover. The routed modules.
Is it worth doing a part two?
We could do that as well. Let me know what you want to do.
Yeah, let's get a part two. Let's just get that on the schedule. And then, yeah.
Okay, I'm game. What about you?
Exactly. Sounds good.
To hear Lars speak? Hell yeah.
All right, well, we'll get it figured out. We'll see if we can get it on the calendar sooner rather than later. And that means it probably won't be on a Monday, which is when we usually record. But yeah, we'll make it happen. And let's go ahead and get to the picks.
Yeah, the picks.
All right.
Hey, folks. I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been working a lot on figuring out how to help people become the most valuable developers on their teams or becoming the top 5% of developers in the field. If you're looking to level up, figure out how to contribute more, get the career you want, get the career that you want that will support the lifestyle you want, then you should check out the Most Valuable Dev Summit. I've invited some of my friends across the community, people that you've heard of, people that have worked on systems that you use on a daily basis, people who have invented new ways of doing things over the years in programming, and I've asked them one question, and that question is, how do you become a top 5% developer? How do you become one in 20 of the best developers out there? And so we're going to go ahead and have that conversation with them in interviews on the Most Valuable Dev Summit. And you can find that at summit.mostvaluable.dev.
Richard, do you want to start us off with picks? You sound excited.
Yeah, of course. Well, I'm more excited about the fact that we will have Lars again because, yeah, I had a bunch of questions and some ideas I wanted to bounce off him. But anyway, I'm happy that he's agreed. Picks, yes. So as I mentioned in the last episode, I recently went down to Crete in Greece, and I just decided to pop my memory card into from my DSLR to my laptop, started looking at the pictures. And I hadn't used Lightroom in a long time. And I just popped it open and I was shown this window about all these new features that they've added. And I just want to say, I mean, Lightroom is for me, it's just me as a photographer. It's my other job, personal work. But I just really love the software. I love the way that how it's so intuitive and easy to use. You know, anyone can just really install it and start using it. So I like to pick Lightroom from Adobe. The other one is also software as well. It's open source. It's called MRemoteNG. If you use Windows for your day-to-day work, you might be familiar with this. It's a remote connections manager for Windows. I use it quite frequently at the office because we have different virtual machines that we need to test things and so forth. And it just comes in handy. So yeah, those are my picks.
Awesome. Sonny, do you have some picks for us?
Obviously, this is my first time, so I have to be sure what I'm supposed to say in this picks. Can I talk about things I'm working on? Or
yep, anything you want.
Okay, super stuff. Well, I've been working on something called Angular training for a while. It's long overdue. Everybody's messaging me saying what is happening. I'm glad to say that it's probably maybe going to be launched, you know, in the next couple of days, hopefully. And this is a angular.training, so you cannot forget like the actual homepage. Yeah. Don't ask me how I actually got that domain name. Yes, I'll tell you
nice.
Who I had to, you know, get in a corner with a gun to give me that one. But yeah, it's going to be all things Angular. there's so much content around Angular, and you know, like people like Lars, like they're the reasons why we get to learn with all the amazing stuff they put on Dev2 and you know, and everybody else here. And so I want to do my part, which is I like to, you know, teach with a fun, with a little bit of fun. And also every day I fix a bug, and I want to share that with the world. You know, I want to, you know, share that little thing, the simple things. Like there was one time I wanted to create a secondary, what's it called, configuration. Angular comes with prod and all of that. And yeah, you can read about it, but a lot of the times you just actually want to see people do it. So I it's a low like investment type of thing where I just go on, create a 5-minute video and just show you something very, very specific. But the idea is that over time, you would have a catalog of literature that you can follow, a playlist of like getting to know Angular from like installing the CLI all the way to like doing advanced things. And in the future, we might be inviting people like yourselves to just show some of the amazing things you're doing here. So yeah, but yeah, so stay tuned to that, angular.training. If you're listening, go on the webpage and sign up to the mailing list and just, yeah, be notified when we finally wake up.
We will do that. Cool. We will.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Subrat.
So, yeah, so I'll pick two things. So one is a famous book called 4-Hour Workweeks. I think everybody knows about that. So no need to explain more. So it's just making life easy. I am on halfway through that. So maybe next week it will be finished. And then I hope my life will be great somehow. And the second one, I would like to pick my YouTube channel, which is Fun of Heuristic. And it's again about Angular, mainly focused on Angular and web technologies. So I have covered on Angular topics and some Node.js topics. So guys can go ahead and check. And that's the two picks.
Awesome. If you guys can put the links to all that in the show notes, that'd be awesome. Or in the chat, so we can get them in the show notes. I'm going to throw in a few picks. My first pick is actually something pretty simple, but I started the Master Swim Team. I think I talked about this last week. And one of the things that's really nice to have for the Master Swim Team, especially since we're kind of in a heat wave right now. In fact, we have an excessive heat warning for the next like 3 or 4 days. Getting up over 100 degrees here in Utah. If you're not in the US, that's 40, 41 degrees here in Utah. It's not super humid, but it is still really, really, really hot. And so at Walmart, they sell these squeeze bottles. This is Gatorade branded, but it's just a water bottle with the nozzle. You know, it doesn't, like, it's spill proof. You have to squeeze it and put pressure behind it in order for the water to come out, and then it comes out in the stream. But it's so nice. I don't know why, but that pool, they heat it to like 75 degrees or something. So it is warm. And warm is nice if you're going to play in the pool. Warm is not nice if you're going to work out in the pool. And so anyway, it's the first time I went, it was brutal. And I forgot my water bottle. I left it at home. And I was just about done by the time we got there. And so it's nice to be able to grab some water. I usually just drop a few ice cubes in it and then fill it up on my way out the door, and it stays cool through the whole workout. But yeah, I'm going to pick that. And then I'm going to pick a couple of other things. So I think I may have mentioned last time, and if not, I mentioned to these guys last time that I missed my marathon last weekend. And I missed it because I was sick, and it was either try and go run it and probably have a problem on the trail or just skip it. And so I talked to them and they deferred my registration till next year. So if anyone wants to run a marathon with me next year, I wasn't planning on it before last week, but I'm planning on it now. I was looking at marathons and trying to decide, because when you train for a marathon, it's a lot of work, right? And I didn't want to lose that training. But a couple of things kind of appealed to me. And so I decided to put off the marathon a little longer than I was going to. And I'm aiming at the St. George Marathon, which is in October of this year. And one of the reasons was that I wasn't super excited. I was a little bit undertrained for the marathon. I was pretty sure I could finish it in the time that they needed me to finish. But because they have a time limit and then they have to open the roads back up, so I could finish under the maximum time allowed. But yeah, I figured a little more training probably wouldn't go amiss. The other thing though is that I ran the St. George Marathon 2 years ago. And so I'm looking at possibly improving my time on the same route. And so if you're looking for training programs, one thing that I found, so I did hire a coach the first time I did a marathon, and she was actually pretty good. but it was kind of pricey. It was like $100 a month. And there's a program out there called Training Peaks. And I think it's like $20 a month. And then you can actually just pay for a training program and it'll put it on your calendar for you. And so I've been picking up, I just picked up a 4-month marathon training program because it's in 4 months, right? And so I'm just going to do that. And it's been pretty awesome. So I've been pretty happy about that. So I'm going to pick that as well. And then I'm just going to remind everybody to go check out the Dev Influencers podcast, devinfluencers.com/podcast. Lars, what are your picks?
I had one pick, but since we're doing a part two, I'll save it for them. So now I've just pulled out a new pick here because I was reminded of a book that I read recently that made quite an impression on me. It's by Thomas Eriksson. I believe he's Swedish and works in sales. It's about communicating with people and these four, you might know these four classical personality traits, the red, the green, the yellow, and the blue, right? So he's speaking on that topic, but also learning how to communicate well with people that have a different personality from yourself. And the best thing about the book is its title. It's called Surrounded by Idiots.
Yeah,
nice.
It's like there's actually three of them I've just noticed. So I'm going to have to read the other two. The second one is called Surrounded by Psychopaths, How to Protect Yourself from Being Manipulated and Exploited in Business and Life. And the third one is new, and it's called Surrounded by Bad Bosses and Lazy Employees. Wow.
Like that.
So awesome names. And the first one, Surrounded by Idiots, is the one I have read most of. And the name comes from early on in his career, the author. He interviewed, I think it was a CEO of some company. And one of the comments that the CEO gave him was, I don't know how I'm running this company because I'm surrounded by idiots. Like this department, they are like 3-year-olds, and this other department, they can't think on their own. And this third one, they never deliver on time. And
I worked at that company too.
And so Thomas asked him, well, who hired all these idiots? Then he was kicked out of the meeting and was never allowed to speak to him again.
Wow. That's hilarious.
But that's something to think about, right? Yeah, like if everyone in the company except the CEO is an idiot, like maybe that's not what's really wrong in the company, right? So really, yeah. Really a nice book. It like communication is on the receiving end. If you tell me something, the result, the outcome of that message is whatever I understood. So it's important for me to be able to communicate well to you. And a tool for helping with that is trying to understand your, like, how's your thinking? Because we think in different ways. And some of that is based on, of course, our culture, but also our personality traits. So it's interesting to learn about how you can communicate well and work better with colleagues that have kind of a different way of thinking than yourself. Also, you'll get some insights into yourself, like, why am I thinking that way? Because you'll recognize yourself in some of these patterns and ways of communicating and acting in professional life as well as in personal life.
I love
I will read this the next after the 4-hour real quick.
Yeah, it's interesting just from the sense that I think a lot of times we focus on our technical skills and we neglect the people skills, right? And then we get frustrated because then the people don't do what we want. Yeah, and in reality, it might be that we didn't communicate clearly what we needed from them.
It's important to understand the intention of what someone is doing. Like if you can understand their thinking, you can start to understand why are they doing this? Why are they saying this? Why are they reacting in this way? So that will give you some insights into what you might seem as completely ridiculous is like they're coming from a different place. So that person has a different way of thinking. So their intention is good. Usually that's the case. And you'll start to learn how to identify that and think about that. What can this person be thinking since they're doing it this way? Or are they saying that or responding in this way to what I'm saying? That's really insightful.
Yeah, it's a very, very, very good point. And I don't want to take anything from that, what you just said. I think you've put it in a very, very compact way. And I totally agree. It's all about that thing of putting yourself in someone's shoes and walking a mile in it, you know, and try and sympathize and all of that. But yeah, 100%, nicely put.
100%. I think I can just briefly add to that as well. Like, I think it's this, what we've just talked about is also like a huge problem in our community, because we as tech people, a lot of the time we were too busy learning how to code instead of like talking to people, which is not a bad thing. So I'm a bit different in the sense that, you know, I did the whole 360. I was the extrovert that just found a computer, right? I was the guy that was talking to everybody that just found a computer and was like, oh, this stuff is cool, right? Like, so for the longest time, I had to like realize that even me coming from the outside, that I had to also learn how to communicate with people that, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a, I always say the best way is we tend to see the world the way we are, not the way the world is. So 9 times out of 10, whenever I approach a situation or I'm trying to interpret something, I'm always saying, okay, hold on. No, whatever I'm interpreting, 9 times out of 10 is probably from my own perspective, my own. I'm not seeing this most likely. And a lot of times you are actually seeing it the way it is, but you have to take that responsibility. I mean, like, maybe I'm seeing it the way I am, not the way it is. And then when you give that grace to another person, if that's the case where you are seeing it incorrectly, in the sense that you are seeing a situation not the way it is, but the way you are, then you're more likely to be open to, okay, understanding where that person's coming from, versus today where people would make an interpretation or judgment of a situation. We see it on social media and insist that is the be all, end all. And I think that's where we get into dangerous water. So I guess what we can all do is really extend just that to the other person. You know, I always think about this. Am I seeing this the way I am or the way the world is? And that way I can always edit the way I am to become a better version of the way I am. That way I can, 10,000 people can speak to me. I can understand 10,000 different ways of communicating. That's good versus just the one that I have, which is myself. So yeah. I don't know. I don't want to get too weird about that.
Many times it's not about being right or wrong. And that's the thing, right? You end up in a situation where you're thinking, well, they're wrong, but they're probably right in their own way and from their perspective, right? They have a different background, they have a different intention and a different purpose of what they're doing or what they're saying or what they're believing. And a lot of times, like, you can't just convince someone because they probably have a much different view than yourself. So it's not really about being right or wrong, and we should I'd be thinking more about that, especially on tech Twitter. I'm no saint, but believe me.
Dang.
It's rarely about being right or wrong. So yeah. Try to think, like, put yourself in another person's shoe, as you said, Richard. That's really, yeah, really helpful.
That's an interesting point. There's something I read recently. So like, someone wrote, I don't want to be right. I don't care about being right. I want to have the right answer. And that completely changed the way I was like, I don't care about being the right person. I just want to have the right answer. So if having the right answer is the most important thing, that means if you've got the right answer, I'm willing to put up all what I think about what I'm saying because your answer is right. And that's what the loyalty should be. It should be about the truth, not about who gets to take the bacon home. So that's very interesting, like, way to think about it, I guess.
Yeah. And just to kind of wrap up, I think the other thing is that we all have broken thinking. And so sometimes my broken thinking is going to keep me from seeing the truth that you're saying. And so that's where the grace comes in, right? Is that your broken thinking is different from my broken thinking. So you're going to see truths that I don't, and vice versa. And so we all have to be patient with each other until we can get there.
Yep. I agree.
When you're a public person, like in tech communities or whatever, everything you say can be mistaken for a fact or a truth, even when you know that it's your opinion. It might be an opinion based on like good things like experience and hands-on experience or reading hundreds of hours of reading code in Angular, whatever. So it might be a good opinion, but it's rarely a fact. And that's where we kind of misunderstand each other a lot, because people will take your tweet, Sunny, and they will say, that's the truth. That's a fact. Sunny said it. But that, I mean, I love you and I know you're doing good things, but you are not the single source of truth. Like, I should take what you say as an opinion and apply it, like, not like dogmatically, but take it into account. Think about it myself. and not trying to say, well, Sunny said this, so if you're saying something else, then you're wrong.
To be, yeah, right? Yeah, spot on.
Even though you're a GDE or you're a Microsoft MVP or you're an organizer of a conference or whatever, you don't always have the truth and or the right thing. And it's not about being right, and it's not about having facts. It's about being able to like, it's good to have an opinion, right? And base that on experience, but don't misunderstand other people's opinions from facts. And thinking about it yourself, right? In the way you're expressing it or I'm expressing it, I'll try to lay it out as clearly being an opinion, not a fact, because that's when people get angry at me, when they think that I'm saying that this is the only truth, when in fact, this is my opinion and you are free to disagree. And I'm not saying that you are wrong if you think something else.
Nicely put.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. I have a hard stop, so I'm going to end this, but this has been terrific. The kind of the discussion after the discussion. Lars, we'll start an email thread and we'll get that part two lined up. And to everybody else, Max out.
Adios.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Jama.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.